Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. This is Portal Gaming Podcast. Except for this week, if you didn't already notice, there's a little bit of a... Thanks for letting us know about that.
I thought I had the volume down.
But this week's going to be a little bit of a different Portal Gaming Podcast. As you can already tell, the voice is a little bit different. This is Gary from Late to the Table. I'm going to be slightly semi-hosting this one with my co-host here,
Larry Plano.
Yeah, Larry's a good friend of ours. He is always at the Portal Gaming Store. And we just left Gen Con, and we're going to be starting up the show in 2 seconds. All right, so we're going to start up right now with what happened at Gen Con. This was Gen Con 2017. It's the 50th anniversary of Gen Con. It was the biggest Gen Con ever. I believe they had, 70,000 people there or something like that? 60,000 people there, whatever.
And they made sure to let you know it was sold out. There were signs everywhere. Badges sold out.
I forgot about that. There literally was a sign on, every single corner. And, even if you cross the street, on the other side of the street, it'll be, 3-4 signs saying, hey, we're sold out. If you didn't already know, hey, it's Saturday. We're still sold out. It's like you didn't know that for the past, 3 days already. But yeah, so it was Gen Con. It was 100% sold out. It was a crazy show. It was my first show. Larry, how many times have you been?
My third year in a row, yeah.
Third year in a row, yeah. So at this point, Larry's a veteran. He's actually been showing me all of his ways, gaining all of his wisdom while I'm down here. But yeah, Gen Con was crazy. So what we're going to be basically doing is we're going to be talking about some of the games that we saw, what we liked. Was there anything we didn't really like in particular, even think about? Was there any game we were like, nah?
There's only one game I went there thinking I want to buy this, I'm excited to get it. Then I found out it was sold out, so I was even more excited to get it. And then I demoed it and went, I'm glad it was sold out, and I'm glad I didn't get it.
All right, well, we'll get to that, what that game is soon, though. But what we'll do is, I guess, want to just go down to days, really, at this point. Do you have it organized in days, or what do we have it organized? I can't remember how you had it organized.
Yeah, I got it on my BG Stats app, so I could start with Thursday, our first day.
That works.
And, I'm not going to count some of the demos. What was our first real game we played?
Do you want me to read it while we're driving?
Yeah, that's easier. That's probably... For all you kids out there, please don't use your phone while you drive.
Okay, so we'll start with... Oh, it fell out. All right. So while Larry's fixing his mic there for a second, we'll start with Thursday. First game, I believe, or at least the first one that Larry has here marked out, is Indulgence. Was a trick-taking game from Restoration Games. What do you think about it?
I actually really liked it. You know, it's funny. A couple years ago, we got into playing a few different trick-taking games, liked them, did them for a little bit, and then, you know, really don't play many trick-taking games. And this convention, I feel like I played 5 or 6, and they were all really good. And Indulgence was one of the better ones. I really enjoyed how it played.
Yeah, I was, before I sat down and played Indulgence, I already knew about it, and I already kind of knew that I wanted to buy it, but I wanted to try it out, of course, first. And with this one, yeah, I really did like Indulgence. It was really interesting in terms of how you could shoot the moon and how I shot the moon 4 times in that game, and I lost every single one except for the last one. So I actually ended up winning that game. And that was I'll put an asterisk on that game because everyone was giving me cards, being like, yeah, you're going to win this one. Sure, you're going to win this one. And then I won it. So, that was Indulgence. Really good trick-taking game by Restoration Games. I highly recommend that one. That was a really fun one. Out of all the Restoration Games, I think that was maybe my favorite one. What would you say out of the Restoration Games?
I only played 2 of them, and one of them's a racing game, which we know I don't like racing games. So Indulgence was that. But I am curious, what was the...
Stop Thief.
I didn't get to play it. We did get it for the store demo copy. I am excited to try that one. It looks really good.
Yeah, we'll probably be trying that one out over the next week or two. All right, next game we have listed here is Magic Maze.
Oh, God.
What do you think about that one, Larry?
All right. Listen, that game is great, but you need to be in a state of mind to play that game because, first of all, if you have anyone in your game group who's like, well, whose turn is it? And if you have to ask the question, you know it's whoever that person is, you can't play this game. It's real time, and you're not allowed to talk to each other. You're not allowed to say, hey, you know, friend. It's your turn and you need to move here. There's no turns, and your only communication is either a very forceful stare at your game Maze Runner, or you have a wooden, a very large wooden meeple that you're allowed to tap gently in front of them to get their attention to realize they need to take some action on the board. And the tap gently, very quickly, in all the games I've played and all the games I watch being played, turned into quite aggressive and loud tapping. And all you could hear when someone's playing this game, if you were in the other room or just sitting next to them, all you would hear is tap, 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 tap,
yeah,
tap,
you
tap,
could,
tap.
You could know people are playing a game right. from a few tables away.
It would almost sound like a really like frantic Morse code. Like, it's just all you hear is different levels and intensities of tapping. But the gameplay is really good. It scales from easy to hard. And I watched, when I was reading the rules for a few other games, they had a six, our buddies were playing. I want to say they played five in a row in about 10 minutes and lost every one.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They just kept going and going and kept losing. And I knew when the game was over because they'd start talking. And they'd be like, oh, next time we got to do this and next time we got to do that. Mm. And then I knew they'd start playing again because they didn't hear anything other than tap, 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 tap. So... really cool game. I was impressed with that one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, and just a quick little overview of how that game works is just in case no one's heard of it. The way the game works is that there's a maze. You start out with a single tile in the middle of the floor. There's about four meeples in the center of it. And you're basically trying to move the meeples to their designated areas by revealing new tiles. And once the new tiles are revealed, you go to new spaces. So you're trying to get them to their designated spaces and then get to their exits after they've all found their spaces. And the whole thing is silent. You can't talk. The only way you could talk is the red meeple that Larry just mentioned. And it's all timed. And the best part about it is that everyone could do, like, one action. So you could, like, let's say, for example, Larry can only move to the right. I can only move to the left. And you don't have a designated character. You move all of them. It's all real time. So it's a really funny game to watch. And yeah, that's... I would go as far as saying that that might be my favorite game of the con. But I knew I was going to like it a lot before the con. So that might be... I'm not exactly sure if that should count. I don't know. Might have. But next game is Ex Libris.
Ugh. So, I love that one.
That was the Renegade Studios, Renegade Games game, like their big hit of the con, if I'm not mistaken. That one sold out first day, if I'm not mistaken, right? Like,
I think it sold out quick, but I think I got it first day, so I didn't keep going back. But I think, like Clank, they might have done 50 a day or 75 a day.
Oh, gotcha.
Which is great when companies do that to give people that are coming Saturday, Sunday, Friday, other opportunities to get the game. So,
gotcha. Now, that was, that was a really good one. I played that one. The way the game works, it's a worker placement game. And each person has two regular characters, two regular workers, I guess you could say, and one special worker that has a unique ability. So, and there's like, what, 12 in a box or something like that? 12 unique characters where it mixes up the game a ton.
And they have pretty nice meeples for each one, too.
Yeah, and they're pretty nice meeples. There's a, was it?
Gelatinous cube.
Yeah, there's just a cube with like, looks like Jell-O in the middle of it. But so it's a worker placement game in which you're trying to get your workers on certain actions, and the actions change every single round. Usually at the beginning of every round, you draw like four or five unique places to go for actions, and then every round you draw a unique four or five more, whatever. And you're basically collecting books to fill out your tableau, and your tableau is basically a bookshelf, essentially, and you're basically using that to get points and make a score. There's a unique scoring mechanism every single game, and the battery on my camera is getting ready to die, so we're going to put this on pause and we'll be right back in a second. Alright, so the video camera died there for a second, so we had to switch cameras. So what we were talking about before was Ex Libris. I'm pretty sure I got through how to play the game. So what do you think about that game, Larry?
I really liked it. I think going into the con, it was a game that I knew something about, and I thought, let me check it out. And I actually don't think it was hyped enough going into the con. I think it really was a gem. It was a lot of fun. I envision a ton of replayability between the characters, the different action spaces. Expansions for that game should be pretty easy. And it kind of works a different part of your brain when you're thinking not just about actions you want to take. It's also, spatial awareness with where those bookshelves are, because there's some structural things you have to follow, alphabetized, as well as bottom, middle, top, biggest rectangle for points. So I really liked it. I think anyone who's into any kind of midweight Euro, light to midweight Euro, would like that game.
Yeah, I agree with that one. That was a really big surprise for me. I was really surprised in terms of, like you said, how diverse the game could be from time to time. Like, it really can mix it up from game to game. That was a really big surprise to me. And that was one where I think it was, it definitely was underhyped, I think. I definitely agree with that. Because I actually didn't know about it at all before the con. Like, I knew it existed. I knew it was a library game, but that was it. I barely knew how the gameplay worked. And out of all the games I heard about in Gen Con, that was probably the one I knew one of the least. That was by far the least amount I had to go as far as saying. Could be my fault, but I don't know. So the camera might actually cut off in a second, but we're going to run this one dry. All right, Larry, what do you think of 5-Minute Dungeon? That's the next one on the list.
That's quick. I played that with Eric as a filler while we were waiting, and it's quick.
All right. Yeah, camera cut off again. Sweet. So, yeah, we're running dry on batteries. What ended up happening was I forgot to charge batteries last night. But anyways, what do you think of 5-Minute Dungeon, Larry? That's where we cut off at.
And I'll do it under 5 minutes for you. But no, it's a quick little... You have so many cards in the deck that you're flipping over and fighting through. And fighting them is just basically set matching. It's like you need two yellows and a green, whatever the symbols represent. It's similar to Magic Maze in the sense that it's fast, it's frantic, it's 5 minutes. But in this one, you could talk, and really there's no strategy. You're always able to pass a challenge. It's just a matter if you do it quick enough. So if you're taking your time and going, do I want to do this or that, you're going to lose. But fun, quick, 5 minutes... nice filler.
Okay. Sentry Golem Edition, we're going to go over that really briefly because that is just basically Sentry Spice Road, but they rethemed it to the Golem Edition. They were selling it at Gen Con, and they're only going to be selling it through conventions in their retail store. And the battery's going to die, so we might not even be able to finish all of this. But that was essentially Sentry Golem Edition. But Trickster, that's not even a Gen Con release, is it, right?
Trickster. I don't think so, because we brought it with us to Gen Con, and it was a good game. Yeah. I liked it.
Pow, that was like another little game that wasn't even Gen Con release, if I'm mistaken, right?
Which one?
Pow. That was a game that Phil bought first day.
Yeah, I don't think that was a Gen Con release either.
Raise Your Goblets wasn't either. When I Dream should have been released at Gen Con. That should have been released last year. That should have been in stores by now. Why is that game not in stores? Blows my mind, but I need to play that game. Wasabi, that's also a game that's not a Gen Con release. Severune, another one that's not. You play a lot of games, Larry.
Over 50. That was my goal.
Deckscape, that wasn't another one. Bloodborne, that was released last year's Gen Con. Kingsport Festival, was that a...
Yeah, you're going the wrong way, though, I think.
Oh, sorry. All right, so going up. Oh, Bunny King, first one on Friday. Bunny King, that was a Gen Con release. But that's probably going to come up before we can get to it. But Gen Con, Bunny Kingdom essentially is a drafting game. Best way to put it is it's Seven Wonders with the board. It's very basic mechanics in terms of what you put on the board. There's a like a 10 by 10 grid in which is labeled A through 10 or whatever. And if a card says A6, you can put your bunny on A6. There are buildings you could build that give you more points because if you have buildings connected to resources on the board with your bunnies in it that are connecting all of those spaces together, you get more points in various ways. And there's various little other cards that do different things. You get cards that will help you score points in different ways. But it's a pretty interesting game. Out of everyone, I was the one that bought the game and I liked it the least. But...
If I'm correct, you sold it already.
Yeah, I already sold it, actually. Already.
Did you take a loss on that?
Yeah, like $5. I gave it to Phil for like $5 less, whatever. But yeah, I sold it to him. And the reason why I didn't like it that much was because there's very little take that. It's such a bare minimum take that or even interaction, I guess you could say. It is a little bit, but it's like very passive aggressive. But that was my only issue with the game. I could see it as being a good game, though. And I can see why other people do like the game as well. What do you think, though?
I enjoyed it. I think people would like it. I think my biggest issue with it is the board was kind of scrunched and small.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that one.
And, I mean, they're cute. They're little bunny meeples. I mean, they're tiny bunny plastic meeples. Are they pleeples if they're plastic? I don't know. But, anyway, but the box art on the side, there's like this Braveheart, like warrior bunny with this face like Mel Gibson in Braveheart, painted half blue. And I'm like, oh my God, I expect to see like this cool barbarian bunny with a kilt. And like, yes, like if this was a cool mini game,
yeah,
I'd be all over it, right? Oh, like, yeah. I'd be like, yes.
Yeah.
And instead, cool, it's these little like little plastic.
It looked like they could be in an Easter basket.
And even
or
the buildings
like that.
That they stood on, I mean, it was neat. But those were a little, I would say the component quality was a little off for what I would have wanted. But the game itself, I think you hit it on the head. It was great drafting, some good decisions, but not a lot of player interaction.
Yeah. I mean, the components look like you could take them and throw them in an Easter basket, and you'd be perfectly fine with it. But it's a really a give and take with the components. It was like, it was not as good as it could have been. But it was so almost corny, cute kind of thing that it pulls it off. I don't know, but it's funny though, I think. But next game, real quick, Photosynthesis.
Real quick.
Yeah, you can't describe Photosynthesis quick, because that game, when you look on BGG, there is no description of the mechanics, and I don't blame it, because it really is a unique game, I think, and it blew me away. Like, I was hopping into that game thinking like, oh, it's gonna be okay, it's gonna be solid, everyone loves it, but I might think it's okay. I went to the booth the next day and bought it. I love that game. But what do you think about it? Listen, I
knew I wanted it when I heard Tom Vassell say it should be a Spiel winner.
And I agree 100%.
For me, it was my game of the con. Like, I, even though it's a little on the lighter side, and granted, we played the basic game, I'm curious to see when we allow for some advanced shadowing rules.
Yeah.
I loved it. It looks great on the board. It's a great theme.
Yep.
And it just, there's some great decisions that you go, I'm going to build this tree and grow it. And yes. And then the sun moves a couple of times and you realize, crap, I just blocked three of my trees from getting any sun. Like, it just, it was great. And if you can get your hands on it, get that game, you won't be disappointed.
And that game's a brutal game. That game's not a nice game. Like, you're not being nice to each other in that game as trees. As weird as it looks and it seems like it's a happy-go-lucky game, you're not being nice to each other at all. But next game, Codenames Duet.
That was a surprise hit for me.
Yeah, your Codenames out, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, no offense to Codenames. Out of all the games I own, I probably played it the most because it's so easy to get to the table. But kind of, you know, especially if it's more than four people, I'm kind of done with that 5v5, or, oh, we got eight people, we can play Codenames, and then you're arguing with your teammates. So I think, you know, but Duet was nice because we both shared the same board. So when I'm looking at my board, the cards I'm giving him clues on, he on the backside, he's giving me clues, and some of our cards overlap. And there's three spies, and some of the cards I'm looking at that are spies might be cards I'm supposed to guess as agents that are on his side, but I'm looking at that going, oh, it's a spy, but he's looking at it going, it's an agent. So it was nice. It was a nice change of pace to give clues back and forth, and I think we lost by one agent when we finished.
I missed on playing that one. I was too busy sleeping. But I just knocked out that night. All right, next one's Wartime. Best way to describe it is it's chess-like, where you have like three or four units or so, or at least that's how the demo was, and you're like orcs, goblins, whatever, and you're moving across the board trying to attack and destroy the other team. And what makes it unique is that there's a timing mechanism on every single unit. So if you move a unit, you turn over a sand timer, and you can't move them again until 30 seconds later. And
or 60.
Or 60, yeah. And what did you think about it, though?
I think it's a very creative game. I love the timing mechanism, the thought process into, do I want to use this timer on this unit, this my shorter timer, my 30-second timer, and do more with this unit, or maybe you're putting me in a dangerous situation and I want to swap out my 60-second timer from that unit, you know. But, and here comes the big but.
Big but. It's a big but.
Game looks awful.
It's a really bad, like,
it just looks awful. Like,
the box is cool. The box is cool.
Yeah.
You open the box.
Awful. I'm sorry. Hey, listen, WizKids, you do a lot of great things. We'll talk about Expanse later, but I just don't. The idea is
great. It looked
like
a prototype.
If it was a smaller company, I would have thought, this is your prototype. I can't wait to see, you know, the retail version.
It doesn't even look like a big company prototype. It looks like some guy made a prototype in his garage, and that's their final version of the game.
So what it is, is because it's real time and because it's so quick, they have these plastic, almost like Warhammer 40K flying bases. Mm-hmm. So you can slide these cardboard discs and stack. So if you have a unit of 8 orcs, you have 8 discs. And if I go and attack Gary's orcs and do 4 damage, I just take 4 discs off. So it's easy to deal with hit points that way, being in the real-time nature. But there's very little art on the wooden discs.
None. There's like
they're
none.
They're not hard it's quality. Graphic design. Like if they were plastic or poker chip material with a nice, you know, with nice art design on them, I would have bought that game. I would have been like, yes, I love this.
Yeah.
But it looks like something my kid could have put together.
Literally.
So literally. I'm a little disappointed in that. That was too bad.
I'm very disappointed. It's like, it's almost borderline unprofessional. I didn't even go as far as saying, like, I'll call you guys out on that. It was borderline unprofessional in my opinion. But sorry, Brandon. And Brian, this is on your show. What's called? Oh, yeah. Next is 13 minutes. We both play this one, too. 13
minutes.
Did you
ever get your cubes?
No! I knew I was going to forget. Okay, 13 minutes is, they took Twilight Struggle and put it into a 30-minute game, and that was 13 days. Then they took that 30 days game and put it into a 13-minute game, and that's 13 minutes. And 13 minutes is basically a really quick micro game where you're taking, like, I think it's like 13 cards or something like that. And you are playing cards in the center of the table, and you're taking off cubes and putting on cubes to realign those cards, pushing it back and forth between you and the opponent. You naturally want more on your end to score more points, but if you have too many of the same types, you'll cause a nuclear war at the end of the game and lose the game automatically. What I thought of the game, really good micro game, really good. I see definitely a metagame to develop. Getting all tongue-tied right now, developing in it, but and it's like a $10 game too on top of that, and it's like easily can fit in your pocket, so it's like I have no problems with that game, and I can see it, like, it's one of the better two-player filler games I've played, I say, in a long time. Like, there's Lost Cities, there's 13 Minutes Now, there's I'm trying to think of what else is out there. Like, there's maybe Tides of Madness, but that game gets a little old quickly. But this one, it's definitely one of my favorite two-player filler games at this moment right now. What did you think about it, Larry?
I thought it was great. My only thing I would say is I don't know that it's got a ton of replayability, especially if you're playing it with the same person. The lack of variety of cards, I think, is going to get to a point where you're going to know every card in the deck. And the mechanism at the end of the game where the other card gets put face down and then flipped over and could cause a nuclear war if it matches your suit.
You'll
know what your opponent has. Your opponent's going to know what you have. Now, if you're teaching it to a new player or you're only playing it a couple of times,
you're going to be destroying that other player.
Well, unless you hold back, true, you know, to that point. But for $10, you're going to play that game 8 to 12 times and enjoy it. And if you don't play it too much and you spread out your plays, you'll never get to that point where you know every card and the symbols on every card, and then you won't have that problem. So, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. Mm.
I think I personally would actually like it more when it got to that point where you know everything, so it's like, what am I going to do? I don't know. But I have to see if that ever does happen. All right, Professor Evil and the Citadel of Time. This is the game that Phil bought, that co-op.
I got to tell you, that is probably my biggest surprise at the convention. Like, surprise.
Oh, like you walked into it, like, not knowing anything.
I heard people talking about, oh, this game actually looks good. Oh, it's not bad. And I'm thinking, the name of the game is Professor Evil and the Citadel of Time. I'm expecting to see some Cartoon Network graphic design silly game. And it was gorgeous. Yeah. Other than, I do not understand why they put cardboard standees when it's hard to tell who your character is. I would rather just a wooden, not even a meeple, just a wooden
pawn
peg,
or whatever.
A wooden pawn.
Yeah.
That would have been perfect because there's other wooden components and it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But it's got standees, which I would, if I bought that game, I'd throw the standees out and just put some colored wooden pawns in it.
That was that's one of the rare games in which I don't know why they went that extra step to do that instead of just going with something basic. Because once you guys play that out, I was like, Yeah, this would be, because the standees, you can't really tell from certain angles who's who. So having a wooden pawn would have just been so much easier to tell who's who in
that
game. I'm player
color green, you're yellow, he's blue, whatever.
Only thing is colorblind, I guess. Maybe that might have been a reason.
If you're colorblind, you're going to have a heck of a time making out that standee is.
Yeah, because the standees are tiny too. Yeah, like I did. There's one of the standees is actually the bad guy in the game. And
his background is a different color base, right?
Yeah, his is. But I still had a hard time. Yeah,
different color background, but the same base.
But I still had a hard time telling who was who in that game. I was like, oh, who's the bad guy? I'm like, oh, it's him. But
it did play great.
Oh, yeah, we're complaining about the game. The game was great. Like, it really was a really good game.
Yeah, that was a surprise hit for me.
Yeah, my only problem with the game was that, besides that one standy thing, I personally didn't. I feel like I won't purchase that game until there's expansions, until there's more mechanics. Cause when I ask how the game can get harder, it's just that they add different harder treasures in the game because you're trying to run around and steal treasures. They just add harder ones in the game, and they don't add anything new. They don't add any new mechanics or anything like that. And it's a very simple game, which makes it great. Like, I would rather play that than Pandemic. Like, now. Like, if we're going to play a co-op, I'd play Professor Evil over Pandemic any day of the week. But next is Edge of Darkness. I did not play this one.
Yeah, I got to tell you, for all those Mystic Veil fans out there, I remember when I got Mystic Veil, I thought, it's cool, but it's not really a game. It's just a mechanic. And I read the articles about how there was this game, and they thought it was too grand, so they scaled it down. The game is awesome. Like, Edge of Darkness, I can't wait. It's more than just card crafting. It's a full board experience. And unlike Mystic Veil, where you're card crafting just your cards, the back of the cards you're crafting for yourself have the monster.
All right, so, so now we're on Plan C right now. And as you guys can tell, it's not even daytime anymore. We both took naps in between. But, the camera ran out on the battery ran out on the other camera. Now we switched over to the second camera. So this is technically Plan C because we had different batteries. That's Plan B. Now we're on Plan C, different camera altogether. So where we left off on last time was Edge of Darkness. I didn't play this one. Larry, what happened with this game?
Yeah, so like I was saying, it was the real predecessor to Mystic Veil. And it has the card crafting mechanism. But as you craft your own cards, on the backside of that crafting, the monsters are also getting crafted and they're getting stronger. Also, it's not your own deck. It's a communal deck that has a row in the middle that you grab two cards a turn from, and then you go to almost like a worker placement action on the board. Interestingly enough, there's neutral cards, there's your cards, and then there's your opponent's cards. You can take your opponent's cards, you have to pay to use them. And then after you use them, the card goes to your opponent so that they can use them next turn. You can take neutral cards and actually make them your own with a different action space choice. Really ingenious. And they also have, the monsters have almost like a dice tower. It's a cube tower that shoots the cubes into three directions, slots, where the monsters sit. And once one monster accumulates 8 cubes, it attacks. So every turn, whatever cards you play will have cube values on them. That's how many cubes you take out of a bag and throw in this tower. And whoever has the most cubes on a monster, that's who the monster attacks. There's also a neutral cubes that if the neutral cubes are the most on a monster, the monster attacks every player. So really, they've taken the Mystic Veil card crafting to a really interesting board game. I demoed it with Phil and Eric, and I think we were both quite interested in it.
Is that the same mechanic as a Shogun, if I'm not mistaken?
It's similar. Shogun and...
With the dice, that is. Or not the dice, but the
cubes. Shogun
the cubes, yeah.
And... the only difference, Shogun and Amerigo, cubes get stuck in the tower. Hmm. In this, the cubes all come out, but they come into three different slots.
So you're kind of spreading
these cubes out amongst the monsters that are awaiting to attack.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really neat, and it looks great. I'm excited for that one. It's coming to Kickstarter quarter one.
Okay.
So look for that.
Okay, sweet. And So there's Einstein, His Amazing Life, and Incomparable Science. I don't think that was a Gen Con game, was it? That was just like, they just had it there at Gen Con.
I've never seen it before. I'm not sure. It was a fun, light game, tile laying. I think it plays in about 20 minutes. We played it twice. We had a good time with it.
Oh, nice. And it was Virulence, an infection card game.
You know what? I really like that. I don't know if Phil or Eric bought it, but somebody bought it. So
one of us four bought it minus me. So actually, right. One of you three bought it.
Right. Well, not me. I know I don't have it. So one of those two. Think Sushi Go as far as set collection, right? And there's some negative points. However, you're bidding. You're not drafting. So the cards, if it's a four-player game, four cards come out in the middle, and you have bid cards, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then a pick your bids up. And there are some cards that come out that increase your bid value, but there's also some bad cards. So you might get an 8 that shows up, and you can replace your one bid that's in your discard pile for an 8, so you got a better chance of winning what you want in the future. But there's negative points in there, and there's like ones. So you might get stuck winning the 1 and replacing your 4 or 5 if that was in your discard pile and making your bids weaker. Really interesting. Played in about 15 minutes. It gave me that Sushi Go feel, but instead of drafting with the bidding. And of course, it's from that same company that's doing that like cell biology game, Cytosis or something. Mm-hmm. So they do all the science games. So it was pretty neat.
Okay. And next is Tournament at Camelot, another game that I didn't play. Is this the night where I just wasn't around you guys for a while? Probably was.
I don't
know
where you were, Gary. Tournament at Camelot, you know, Sam Healy said great things about it. That's what got me interested in it. I liked it. It's reverse trick-taking with character powers. You also have life points. So again, reverse trick-taking. Lowest card wins the trick. The tricks are worth damage. Most tricks are worth 5 points of damage. Poison's worth 10. There's a Merlin card worth 25 and a Merlin's Apprentice worth 10. Great game. Some people didn't like it because it went a little long. And I don't know if that was our first play, why it went long, if it was just some wonky character powers that we chose. Mm-hmm. But I had a good time with it. I love Arthurian lore, so the game appealed to me from a theme standpoint as well.
Did no one win this game? It doesn't look like it's marked as a winner in this one.
It's kind of Melissa won that game.
Okay.
And I think that was the first game I played with her. I don't know if I had her name in my memory. I might have wrote her down as Gen Con 1 in the app.
No, you got everyone's name on it.
Okay.
So it's Duple. That's another one I didn't play.
Who?
Duple.
Oh, that was just a game she had. It was like a word game we played with Chris while we were waiting for everyone to get food.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, it was... So there's a category, right? So let's say it was fruit. And then there's a deck of cards, and you flip over letters with symbols. I have an E, you have a B, someone else has a G. And they keep flipping cards until 2 symbols match. So if my symbol and your symbol matched, you had a G, I had an O. The first one of us to say a fruit with my letter and your letter in it wins the card.
Oh, that sounds like that party game. Oh my God, it's not going to come to me. It starts with an A. I have it. It's a anatomy or enigma or enigma or enigma or something like that.
But it was cute. It was fun. And, you know, once you win a card, then the next category gets flipped. And we had a Y, and Chris and I had a couple of letters that just were not working. And we had to flip like 4 different categories before we could figure out a word with the 2 letters we had.
But so that was the flaw. You guys just don't know.
Our vocabulary stinks.
Yeah. All right, so what about Galapagos? Oh, that was the one he was talking about before where he was trying to find it, right? It was like, I can't remember.
Well, no, this was, have you ever heard of, I'm going to get the name wrong and Brian's going to laugh because we demoed this game last year and they have it at the store. Globes, like these colored splatter things and this company changed their games at their table every day. It was kind of interesting.
Okay.
Anyways, this game was awesome for a little $20 box. You're stuck on an island.
Did you get this one?
Oh, yeah. We played it.
So you bought it too?
Yeah, I bought it and we played it six players. Actually, in this game, well, I'll tell you how it ended in a second. In this game, you could have no winners. Everyone can win cooperatively, or you can have a mix and match. Basically, it's like, I don't want to say Survivor Island, but basically, every round you have to have enough food and water to feed everybody on your island. Mm-hmm. And you have to continually collect wood and build rafts, so you have enough rafts and enough food and water to escape the island before the hurricane comes and you got to leave.
Yeah.
Long story short, we were doing well, then things went bad. I kind of voted Phil off the island, got him killed. We're down to five people. I had a fishing pole, so no one really wanted to kill me. I was valuable because I was getting more food. And Eric was valuable. He had a canteen, so he was getting more water. Because if you kill me, my item goes away.
Oh, okay.
With the permanent items like that. So, long story short, Melissa had a gun, and she had more bullets than we realized. And at the end of the game, when the storm was ready to come, she killed the four of us left in the game.
Really?
Had enough food and water for herself, jumped on the raft, and survived. So a lot of fun. Real interesting, and I told her, it was like a Lord of the Flies moment. Nice lady. All of a sudden, give her a gun, give her some bullets, give her a raft, and boom, we were all dead. She killed her husband, too. But no, it was a lot of fun. Definitely a game that people that like that kind of interaction would really enjoy.
Oh, man, I remember you talking about this the other day, and I was like, I was trying to remember to get it, and I completely forgot about it. All right, so next is Fate of the Elder Gods. I remember you playing that one twice, and I jumped into the second game.
No, you got to play that one. What'd you think, Gary?
Yeah. All right, so in that one, basically what Fate of the Elder Gods is, it's a barely an area control game. You got guys. Is it more of a dudes on the map, I guess? Is that like a dudes on the map?
It looks like dudes on the map or area control, and it really isn't either. It's almost...
It's just like, people, places.
Yeah, worker just to help placement. Out. those are all action spaces that... Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's like worker placement with hand management.
And some temporary area control just for the turn you're using the power.
Yeah, it's really weird because for people that like area control games, for people that like dudes on the map games... You might not like it because it gives you that impression, but it's not. But it's a really good game. It's a solid game. I don't think I'd buy it, but what was really cool about it is that whenever you go to these places, basically doing a worker placement action almost, which you do by playing a card of that color and you go to that area, you get to do one of these like six or eight actions or whatever. And basically the actions boil down to you... Because the objective of the game is you're trying to do... you're either trying to get the most points. Is it just, get the most points?
Well, summon your god, I guess. Yeah. Which is the most points, but you have a track up to 9.
Yeah, which... Once you get up to that 9, then you summon the god.
Summon pool points or whatever they're called.
Yeah. And the other way to win is if people go crazy around... Oh, no. There's elder signs found around you. Which I think if you go up to 9 elder signs, then you're basically found out by the... What's the inspectors, whatever, and they basically have shut down your clan essentially. And at that point, then the game ends. Whoever has the least amount of elder signs at that point wins. So you got the least amount of points, but the least amount of elder signs, and win the game at that point. So basically, you're going around the board. You're going all these different actions to draw more cards, so you can have more options of where to go. Each card you draw, not only does it allow you to go to a different place, but it's also a spell as well. So at the locations that you go to, they have cards placed down from previous players going to that area or leaving that area, actually. And you use those to make spells. So the spells, break the game. They do a whole bunch of different things. What's also cool about the game is that there's a Dead of Winter mechanic in it in which you you play a curse on someone. When you play a curse on someone, the player next to them gets to look at a card. And basically, whenever that person does that action or that thing, then you get to trigger that curse. So it's very Dead of Winter when you do that, in my opinion.
That was actually my favorite part of the game.
Yeah,
the curse mechanism was very creative.
Yeah, exactly. There needs to be more games that steal the Dead of Winter mechanic. And I say that in the nicest way possible because I feel like those guys have had enough time with it on their own to have made more games besides just more Dead of Winter expansions.
Well, what's nice about it, the other person reads it to themselves.
Yeah.
And now the whole game... you don't know what's going to trigger that curse. So it's like this real, it gives you this feeling of impending doom on you because
it's a curse. You're,
every time you go to do something, you're thinking, crap, is he going to say, ah, you triggered it and something bad happens. But,
and they're usually pretty bad things. Like, these spells are not cheap to use. So it's like all of a sudden you might go through like three turns where you build up enough to make a spell. And all of a sudden you get cursed and you're like, oh, I'm getting ready to activate this spell. And it's like, no, you can't. You're cursed. Discard it or whatever. And that's really hindering. You may think like, oh, that might suck because that just took away three of my turns. But usually when you get cursed, you usually earned it. Like usually either someone put it on you for a really good reason, or you might have gotten a really big step ahead to curse yourself. Like, for example, I had a card that gave me an extra turn. But I got cursed if I did it. It was a really good game. I wouldn't say it's for everyone, but there are definitely people out there that are going to really like that game. It's one of those games which I wouldn't buy, but I wouldn't turn down a play of it. Like, if someone's like, hey, you want to play Fate of the Elder Gods? Yeah, why not?
I'm in the same boat with you. I'm not a big Cthulhu fan. I think I've played all the Fantasy Flight Cthulhu-based games.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably my favorite one of that genre.
Really?
Especially because Fantasy Flight didn't do it. So it's a... Well, and that's no
just offense. Just out of spite?
No, but it's just... It gave a different take on it. First of all the symbols they used for the gods were different than the traditional, what you're used to seeing from Fantasy Flight.
True. Different artwork.
You're playing the cultists instead of the investigators. And in a lot of those Fantasy Flight games, they're cooperative and they're punishing. This game was competitive, and there wasn't anything overly punishing. It was just we're playing a competitive game that happens to be set in that Cthulhu universe.
And it wasn't that long either.
No, it was an hour, maybe slightly more.
I think it was like an hour and a half, maybe.
I mean, the only thing
players
that took a while was waking you up in between turns sometimes, because it was pretty late.
Yeah, I was sleeping during that entire game, but I won the game.
Yes. That'll tell you something.
Yeah, it tells you something about everyone else at that table, too. Learn the game half asleep, won the game half asleep. So then the next day we had Ascended Kings. That was your game that you played. You had that demo of.
I love that game. I got that game.
Yeah,
so I was pretty happy. Quick explanation. I'll call it a 100 square map, so 10x10 map. Interestingly, and it's four kings. You have a character, a king, and if it's a 4-player game, you have four of them. And you're running around the board trying, everyone has a bloodstone on them. You're trying to collect all four bloodstones. And when this Omega Stone appears at the end of the game, you want to, if you have the four bloodstones, you automatically win the game. If you don't, the first player who still has one of their own bloodstones on them that gets to the Omega Stone will win the game. Now, what's interesting about this, there's combat in it, but there's two phase. When your turn comes, you have two choices. You could go into a rest phase, so to speak, where you don't move on the board. You're not active on the board. You're active on your own player board. You roll some dice. You generate gems. You have slots for your gems, like a gem pool, and it's limited. And you have four color gems, but one of them's off to the side. You have red gems, which are attack. Blue gems are magic. White gems are movement, and green gems are defense against attack. And black gems are damage. If you ever take damage, they replace a gem out of your slot. And it only takes at level one, three black gems and you're dead. Level two, four, level three, five. When you die, you become a revenant and you still get to play, but you drop your bloodstone. You then get to use a different deck of cards and spells, revenant spells. So dying in this game, to some extent, is pretty cool. Actually, a few games I watched...
I'm assuming you can't win, but you could still...
Oh, yeah, no, you win.
Oh.
Doesn't matter if you're a living king or a revenant king, as long as you have a bloodstone. When you die, though, you do drop your bloodstone, so you're going to have to acquire another one by killing someone else, etc. Really good. Interestingly enough, you can't turtle in this game. As the rounds progress, after every player's turn, there's blue fire on the edge of the board, on all each edge, and they roll a d4, and whichever edge gets rolled, the fire moves in, and moves in, and moves in, and the board shrinks and shrinks and shrinks, so it's causing you to get into that combat situation. I thought it was creative. There's only 8 minis in the game. Your regular king mini, and then your revenant king mini. But they look great. and it was really a creative way to play a combat-oriented game, especially for people that aren't into just, you know, I played a card, I swung an axe, and I attacked my opponent, and it was, you know, that he's out of the game because I killed him. It's not like that at all. It's not that kind of attacking game. I really enjoyed it. I bought it.
Yeah, I remember you were saying that the closest thing that it came to was Chaos Ball, but well, minus all of the randomness in it.
Right. I mean, it felt that way because it was four players on a small map, but instead of having a team,
just one guy.
Just one, you know, each person. So, and then that whole gem, the way the board worked was pretty creative too. So, yeah. I really liked it. I thought it was cool.
And now next was Papa Paolo, which is that pizza game. Yeah. Basically, ripping off of the food chain magnate theme. No, I'm joking.
No, I mean, this is literally you're delivering pizzas. it's not a business game to some extent like food chain or money-making game. Actually, the victory points in that game are very... There's not a lot of options for scoring victory points. It's basically how many pizzas you've delivered throughout the game plus player board bonus for your, I'll call it, technology level-ups. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun. Looks great. The theme is new and exciting. Pizza delivery, right? A lot of people have been pizza delivery boys or girls in their day. Mm-hmm. And it's a simple game of you have four actions a turn. A pizza delivery guy that you're going to place on one of 16 squares if it's a four-player game. In a three-player game, it's everybody's got four, so 12, yeah. 8 in a two-player game. And when you take that square, you could do one of three. You're thinking about one of three things. You're either going to take the tile you're on to build your city mm-hmm. to deliver pizzas, or you're going to leave the tile there and take the action in the column or the row where you went, which could be gain money, buy, make more pizzas, do a special delivery pizza, or build another pizzeria. But interestingly enough, every row and column has a coin associated with it.
Okay.
So when you're placing for the best tile or action you want, but you're also placing to try to get a majority in that row or column to earn the coin, because money's hard to come by. You don't get money when you deliver or sell your pizzas. You only get money by either taking the money action or through the winning of the column and the row placements. And then after you do that, there's a quick little phase of auctions to see which pizza tile you get, which is your delivery tile, to say you could deliver four pizzas one space away, or you could deliver eight pizzas three spaces away. So two different phases of the game, placing your tile, your workers to get tiles, and then a quick little auction or bidding process, not really an auction, to see how many pizzas you're going to deliver and how far.
Okay.
We loved it. Eric loved it. I loved it. Phil really liked it. And I'm going to forget who we played with. It was one of Phil's friends, but he really liked it. I think it was Mike.
Did Gen Con 1 and Gen Con 2.
No, that's, oh, that's the
a different,
demo.
That's a different, oh, that's demo.
Look at
one,
the but, second oh. time I played it.
Gen Con 2. So,
sorry,
that doesn't help.
I think it was Michael. Oh, I could be wrong.
All right, and then there was Dread Draw.
Awful game. Let's not even talk about it. Don't buy it. No, I'm kidding. You know, it looked awesome. It looked like it was going to be this great game of some kind of push-your-luck skill where you flip a card, you get an 8. The next person flips a card, gets a 5. He's got to get higher than your 8 eventually, so the lowest person keeps flipping. Mm-hmm. But they have to flip higher than their previous card. If they don't, they're out, and then you damage them based on some symbols that are left on your card. So I asked the guy, where's the push your luck mechanism? If I'm at a 10, can I just choose to bow out? He's like, no, you just keep flipping.
What?
I'm like, so it's basically war. I mean, there was no choice. You had no choice. There was no decision option to make whatsoever. It looked great. I was real excited. I saw it, and I'm like, ooh, this looks like a different version of Dead Man's Draw or something. Ooh, let's try it out. Eric and I walked away going, what the heck was that?
Yeah, they rented out an entire booth at Gen Con and everything.
Well, no, that was Upper Deck.
Oh,
that was
really?
That was Upper Deck's game. Yes, we were in the Upper Deck booth looking at Shark Island, which Eric bought, which looks pretty good, actually, and looking at some other stuff. And we're like, oh, this looks cool. Let's try it out. And I was very disappointed.
Oh, man, that's rough. That's like, so that's the next disappointment along with, like, War Time's production value or whatever.
Yeah, and when we get to the Expanse, we'll talk about that.
Oh, that's two away. Sid Meier's Civilization: A New Dawn. I'm sad I missed out on playing this one.
I'm so excited for that game, Gary.
Like, and this, actually, now I think about it, this was Saturday, so this is the day in which I didn't play, like, any games because I was doing video work with the Dice Tower guys for, like, 6 hours, and then I lost... I didn't have a cell phone for literally this entire convention, almost. And then I went to a Secret Code Ball meetup, which was great. And we'll get to that later on because you guys weren't there. I could talk about it. But
Gary, it was like being on vacation with a young child who doesn't have a phone. And we say, listen, Gary, if you get lost, either ask a friendly police officer or meet us at that statue. And that statue happened to be where we played games all day.
And that, hey, there was a second statue. And I was actually at the Secret Code Ball meetup, but that you guys didn't go to.
Oh, that was a debacle. Yes.
But yeah, Sid Meier's Civilization, how's that?
That was amazing.
Is that going to be a buy when it comes out?
What you mean for me?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. So I bought the original Civilization. Well, I shouldn't say the original because I think there's been a bunch. But the latest, the last Fantasy Flight Civ game because I loved Civ.
Yeah.
And it was okay. I liked it. It wasn't a bad game. But I didn't feel like I was playing Civilization.
Yeah.
This game, I feel like I'm playing Civilization. You actually, and I only played, I want to say, 3 or 4 rounds. It was good. But the way they did the demo, I didn't really like. You just sat down after the player in front of you left, so you got, you're just mid-game, not knowing really what's going on, and you're sitting in front of a player who had no clue what they were doing for however long. So, but interestingly enough, if you think of each technology, like military, science, I'm not going to get them all, trading, culture, whatever, production or industry. There's a level one. So in Civilization, we know that there's our technology trees, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this game, they kind of made it simple, but it's creative. Every of the 5 categories, so let's just talk about military for a second. The tier one, you start out with tier one and everything. Let's maybe it's Bronze Works, I don't know. You have a tableau in front of you, almost a track with numbered 1 through 5. And the cards are placed in those tracks. The number above the track also corresponds to a terrain type. Easier terrain type being like a flatlands, plains, harder terrain type being like a mountain. But a lot of the technology actions you can take relate to the numbered space you're in. And the 5th space is the best space. When you use, so think of it as action selection. When you use one of those actions, you slide it down and you bring it all the way back to the number one, to the beginning of the track.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, when you increase your technology, it's not like a track you have to figure out, like, I need pottery and astrology to become,
like,
you know,
how it is in a game.
Right. Instead, it's, hey, you get to take one of your level one cards and make it level two.
Oh, okay.
Then you get to take... And then it's like, now you could get a level 3 technology and then a level 4. So the game we sat down at, now listen to this. This is the truth. We sat down to a game. I looked at the player board I was sitting down for. I had level 1, level 1, level 1, level 1, level 2. I'm like, okay, it's early game. Eric sat down across from me, same game, same time. He had nuclear capability, level 4 military, level 3 and something else, level 2, level 2, level 1. I'm like, my player was doing something really wrong in that game. I don't think they knew what was going on.
Yeah,
but
you was
really,
equivalent of, like, walking around with sticks.
While someone's dropping nuclear. Now, what's interesting, I didn't read Eric's card, but he was explaining to me that he could actually drop a nuke if he used the nuclear power when it was at tier 5. So when it made it all the way down the end of the track to the 5th slot. So you could choose to use the action at any point of the slot. But some of the actions had special triggers or just worked better the farther down the track they were. So I think that's going to be a hot game. I think people are really going to jump on that.
It's not going to disappoint?
No, not at all. I mean, from what I saw, the only thing, if I was to say anything slightly negative about it, is I wasn't loving some of the components. However, it was demo, and they specifically had a sign up that said,
it's like prototype.
Prototype,
like,
not final components. So,
gotcha.
Fantasy Flight, if you're listening, game looks great. Let's make sure those components are up to snuff.
All right, I'm glad to hear that. Did they say ETA on when it's going to arrive?
The guy demoing wasn't. I think it's sometime next year, but.
All right, sweet. And now Expanse, the board game. The Expanse.
for all you Expanse fans out there.
Why? There's actually people that like this game? Is this a well-known game? No,
it's a TV show. It's a great TV show.
Oh, that. Oh, someone was pissed off because they bought that game and they didn't give them an entire resource. Like, they opened up the box, an entire resource that was needed in the game was just missing.
My God.
It's like opening up Cavern and all the wood's not there. So, it's like, well, yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, if you like this show, and I like the show, actually, I read the book and saw it first released at Comic-Con before the show came out, and so I've been an Expanse fan for a little bit. It plays a little like Twilight Struggle, which I like. There's this whole, if I take this card to use it for its three actions, but I don't have a faction, and I'm not using the event portion of the card, who's ever first on the turn order track that has their faction on it can use the event. So very Twilight Struggle-ish. So that part was good. The board was underwhelming. The graphic design on it, I thought, wasn't great. It was a very minimalist, plain board, but not like a artistic minimalist. Just we didn't put much into it. AKA WizKids with that other game we didn't. Okay, but anyway. And again, it just, you know, you score some victory points based on having some cubes here and a cubes there. I didn't feel like I was playing the Expanse. I didn't feel like I was immersed in the Expanse universe. It just felt like it could have been a themeless Euro with the Twilight Struggle mechanic of the cards. Okay, pretty cool. But to sell it as an Expanse game, I think was...
It's really tacked on.
Yeah, and it just didn't feel right. This is the game that I went to the con wanting to buy, there, was surprised. I was surprised it was sold out because, as you know, I was there early enough that I got a lot of stuff that sold out.
Out of all the games you tried getting, this was one of the ones you couldn't get day one?
Right. It was sold out, and they didn't have any more at the con. It wasn't like, hey, come every day, we'll do the first 50.
Oh, really?
It was just gone. Wow. So I'm thinking, crap. I really wanted this game.
You got so lucky then.
I got so lucky because then I played it and I went, oh, thank God I didn't buy this game. I have such buyer's remorse. So, to any Expanse fans out there, take it for what you will, but I was not impressed.
And just as a heads up, Larry literally got every game day one, like almost every single game day one.
I think it was 46 minutes.
Yeah.
I checked the time.
Within that amount of time that Larry got almost every single game, I had Legend of the Five Rings.
For me.
And, yeah, for Larry. And Super Battle Rhino Hero. And then by the time I got those two games, Larry already had at least three bags full worth of games, including, like, Ex Libris, Whistle Stop, Photosynthesis.
Photosynthesis, Wasteland Express.
Yeah, like, he literally had every game. But next on the list is Downforce. This is the one that I thought is a good, solid game. You hate because...
I don't like racing games, so don't judge my views on this game too strongly, because I'm not a racing game guy.
Yeah, basically with Downforce, the way the game works is a racing game. It's very similar to Ave Caesar, in which you're basically racing around a track. You have a hand of cards, and when you play the cards, it tells you how far to move a car. What makes this different than Ave Caesar is that when you play a card, you're going to be moving a bunch of different cars. So, for example, when you have a car, it's going to say move blue 6, move orange 2, move yellow 1, and you do all of those actions. When you do that, though, what makes the game interesting is that you have a betting mechanic, and so whoever who wins the game doesn't automatically win the game. There's also a betting mechanic, so if you bet on the right guy early enough, then you can also win in that way. What I don't like about this game that's different than Ave Caesar is Ave Caesar, everyone has the same exact cards, and you could barely make it around the track twice. So when you're cutting people off in Ave Caesar, which is the same mechanic that's used in Downforce, it really hurts because you're like, I'm not even going to cross the finish line in this game because you could barely make it around the track twice using the cards you get. While in Downforce, you get a random hand of cards. It's random. So one person from the get-go could just have the best cards for their car and make it around the track without having any problems at all, and everyone's still stuck on the first stretch. That's my biggest problem with the game. And, I mean, personally with me, I didn't buy Downforce yet. I could have bought it at the con. I was thinking about it. But if I buy Downforce, I'm honestly going to make a separate deck of cards that make the game exactly like Ave Caesar. And then I'll be fine with that at that point. But great game. I think it's a great game. People are going to like the game a ton. People already do like the game a ton.
Components are great. The board looks great.
Yeah, it's like...
And honestly, I would like it more if we house ruled, like, drafting the cards or even separating that, even the cards that. By strength of numbers and just giving everybody, like, two of this pile, three, you know.
I think a draft would fix that.
That would help. And then the only other thing I would say is I'd like a little more strategy in the betting or a little more options in the betting. Every time it hits the yellow line, I pick one card to win, and that's it. I'd like a win, play, show, or let me pick two cards, and you know, or something where it's just it's a little more strategic in how you bet instead of just three check marks on one of the six cards. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
But for a racing game, it's better than a lot that I've played.
And you're done in 20 minutes, so it's like
that's key. If you go one lap.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some variants or some additional rules to do multiple laps, but...
It wouldn't surprise me. Watch it be a variant in there for drafting. it's like they already thought of it.
Then I'll try it again.
All right, so next game is Red Scare, the social deduction game at a 3D movie theater, right?
You know, I really like the premise of that game. I think I'd like to try it at the store... You know, not the convention loudness and craziness, just, you know, the store loudness and craziness. The glasses were not working well in the lighting there. To use the glasses, you had to take the glass, the red from the glass, and put it directly on the card. So that made the game a little wonky for us. But what's great about this game, the interesting piece, there's two interesting pieces. No one knows who's on whose team.
Well, that's normal for a social deduction.
Okay. But interestingly enough, you randomly give people glasses and don't give people glasses. Oh. You could have one whole team wind up with glasses. You can have one whole team wind up without glasses. And the way it works is you have three cards, three citizens in your hand. They're either citizens that can be identified with glasses or without.
So really?
Yeah, so if you have the glasses on, there's this blue section that without glasses, you could see an S or a P in the blue. With the glasses on, that whole blue kind of dark shades out and you can't see anything in it. So the way it works is there's you judge people and you either exonerate them for plus 2 points for their faction or you deport them for minus one. But here's what's interesting. You have to deport your whole hand at once and they have to be all the same. They all have to be cards you can't personally identify. So I can't get three Patriots in my hand as a Patriot player that I can see are Patriots and exonerate them. I have to get three cards in my hand that I can't read and then judge them. So that so some of the actions are give a player any amount of cards in your hand and have them ID them for you. Or I feel like trade cards. It's really, really, I want it to be a good game because I think it's ingenious. Glasses need to work. They need to... I hope the glasses work in a different setting. That the lighting in the Gen Con that hall there we were playing in was causing problems. Eric said he used the glasses, you know, outside of there and they worked better. So okay. If the glasses work, I think this game has great potential to be a top social deduction game because it's so unique in how they decided to go about it.
You guys scared me because like you guys were talking about it yesterday and it was just like, oh, the glasses didn't work, and then it even seemed like you guys were just like, hey, even if the glasses did work, it was okay game. Like, and it's like, oh,
first play,
I bought it on a whim.
We had a lot, you understand, we had a lot of people that didn't know each other playing it. But thinking on how the game worked, I think there's some great potential there, you know, with anybody's game group, you know, to play a 6 to 10 player game of it. I think you'd have a good time.
All right, so.
If the glasses work.
Yeah. Now you got me excited about that one. I might have to pull that one out on Thursday and learn the rules before then. Next one is Secrets, the hippie okay. Russian U.S. Yes. whatever game.
That is also very interesting. However, it's a social deduction game to some extent, but the rules say you can't talk. The group I played with decided, nah, we don't like that. It's more fun to talk. So they talked, and they checked the BGG threads, and I guess there's been some discussion about that. Where people are house ruling that you could talk. However, I think the game design really would shine if you didn't talk, because the idea is the game is called Secrets, and you're supposed to kind of think about what's going on based on the act. So the way it works is we're all a random faction, and then there's a faction face down in the middle that you could change out with, kind of like
Werewolf.
One day, all
One Night Ultimate Werewolf. Right.
So, but what action you could do is dependent on the card you play. You could play a card that says switch to opponents, look at yours, look at anybody's, etc., etc. And all the cards have a value, negative or positive. And once one person gets X amount of cards, depending on the number of players, four or five, the game trigger ends. Everyone reveals their faction, count up the points in front of them. Most points wins, unless you're the hippie. If you're the hippie, if you have the least amount of points of anyone else, you win. All sounds very good. The way it works, draw two cards. Everyone sees the two cards you draw. And there's a little track that you put little arrows so that everyone remembers what you drew. Then you take one card, put it under the deck, secretly. And then you take a card face down and pass it to anyone you want. They choose whether they want to keep it or let you take it. So all of this interaction is where I think why they don't want the talking. So you keep the card I gave you, you flip it in front of you, and you get to do the action. Or I keep it because you chose you didn't want it. That part is very interesting. Once you start talking, people start going, oh, I looked at his token, and I know he's this, and no, you're lying. It becomes every other social deduction.
It ruins
game.
The card play. It ruins
right.
The entire
it
card
really,
play.
I don't, I, you know, when we first played it, it was like, oh, no, you got to talk. It's a social deduction game. But the more I think about it, I think the real way to play that game is no table talk.
It's kind of like how I feel like Magic Maze would be a horrible game if you could talk in it.
It'd
like
be
that,
easy.
That would ruin the entire game if you could actually talk. But, all right, so then it was Tesla versus Edison, War of Currents.
I bought that.
Yeah, you bought
that. I am so excited. And that's not a new game. I've been looking at that at Gen Con for the last 3 years.
That game's really that old at this point?
I think I've seen it every year I've been to Gen Con, I'm pretty sure.
All right. Should we even go into it since it's like a three-year-old game at this point?
I will say this. I will be bringing it to the portal on Thursday nights when I come, and hopefully someone will want to sit down and play it. Eric and I did a demo of it, really liked it, and it's a gorgeous game. The components are gorgeous. You saw the paper money, which is cardboard money. So.
Okay, oh, yeah. That paper money sold me, but the box didn't. I mean, the box looks cool. The box looks cool. Like, it's like a retro old kind of look. Right. But it's like, oh, what is this, another dry Euro, whatever? Right. It gives off that vibe, like, right off the bat.
The back of the box doesn't show enough of the game board set up to show you its glory, like when you see it on the table. So I'll agree that the box could have done a better job of selling it. Maybe that's why it took me 3 years to buy it.
Yeah, right? Exactly. But all right, so then Sunday, another day. I played all of these games, I think. So Spoils of War to start off with. So with Spoils of War, basically it's Liar's Dice with more stuff. It's literally Liar's Dice with more stuff in it. But
I bought that, by the way.
Did you? Oh yeah, you did buy it. Yeah, you did buy it.
I thought it was really. I think the game club at the middle school where I work will really like it. So
if it wasn't for the middle school, would you have bought it for your own collection?
Probably not, only because my collection is too large.
You don't need to add more.
And it's a light game that's fun, but I'm more into.
You're not
going to
pull
games.
It out all the time and everything. Yeah, and I didn't buy it either. I know one of my other friends is going to buy it soon, but I didn't buy it myself because I have Liar's Dice and I barely pull out Liar's Dice. I'm not going to pull out a game that's Liar's Dice with more stuff in it. So that was the reason why I didn't buy it. I enjoyed it. It's not a game in which someone pulled it out all the time. I'd play it all the time. But I'd say if like someone pulled it out a month from now, I would consider playing it. It didn't seem like it was that long a game. It was solid. Wasn't anything like groundbreaking. Like, I still wouldn't mind someone making a Liar's Dice game with more stuff. Like, I feel like that has so much potential to be earth-shattering. But that game was like, it was good. Just
I think it fills a spot. It's a good filler.
Yeah.
You got 20 minutes in between games where you're waiting for one group to finish.
Yeah.
You chuck some dice. You do some, you know, deductions and some, you know, bluffing. And the cards are cool. And it's Viking theme, right?
Yeah.
So Viking theme is cool.
Yeah.
Play that while maybe, you know, having some Viking fun, and you're good.
Yeah. Like, we were talking before the camera came on about wow factors in games. It was just a good game. No wow factor.
Yeah, no wow factor.
Yeah. Dragonborn, Rise to Supremacy. That was a collectible card game, right?
Yes, which I have, I think...
you got a bunch of...
They gave me, like, 10, like, promo starter pack things so that I can bring some to the store and to the...
I feel like they just really didn't want to carry stuff back. Just like, it was like, here, take it, like, please, like.
And they gave me a store kit, too, which supposedly has more stuff in it. I didn't open it.
But, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, it was cool. You know, we did three different card games today.
Back to back.
Yeah, that I think will, some of them will appeal to the Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon crowd, anybody who's playing card games. I thought all of them were good. I thought... This was probably
the worst
weakest one of all three, but I still enjoyed it, and it had some unique mechanics in it, like with the dice that was defending your tower to suck up a hit, or that acted as a +1/+1 on a creature.
Yeah.
And then basically in this game, you were allowed two monsters per tower, which was almost like a row for you.
A lane or wherever you could fight in or whatever.
And once you lost three towers, you lose the game. It played quick.
I could see them using maybe some pretty clever mechanics to make the game really interesting with all the things going on.
We played demo starters, so I'm sure we didn't see all the mechanics.
They're the dullest probably characters in the entire game, the most generic things are going on with them. And
but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. I see potential in it, but like Larry said, I think it was the weakest one out of all of them. Do you think, I'm trying to think of like what card players might be interested in it,
Old World of Warcraft TCG players or people that are currently playing Hearthstone, it's not Hearthstone.
No, I think the next game is better for Hearthstone players.
Right,
the
but
next
this one is close, though, because it has that automatic resource component every turn.
You never
get screwed out of resources.
It doesn't have a mana system like Magic. It's like you're always going to have resources. That's true.
Yeah.
All right, so next game is another TCG, Lightseekers. This is the one that... Phil went deep in.
He's already got a booster box of packs.
Yeah, he's got what, maybe 50 to 60 plus packs now at this point, I think.
Yeah.
Just from like past day, whatever.
And like all the starters, I think he had to play mat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Now I see why he was so urgent to want to go back to that place. Because I was like, oh, you just want to go over there and maybe buy a couple boosters? He was like, no, I want to buy everything they got. But, Lightseekers, it's another TCG game where it's very straightforward and very simple, in which it's not like the other ones because it has a mana system, but it's very, very light. The way the mana system works is that each card is a particular kind of a resource, and for the most part, cards are free to play, except you can only play two cards per turn because you only have two actions. You can either play a card or draw a card, and you can't draw cards first. You have to draw cards last. So when you play a card... it has a bunch of different effects. You can play it as an attack on someone. You can play as a defend against yourself, which basically heals yourself. Or you can play as a buff, where it has a cool little mechanic where you keep turning the card around. As you turn the card around, it'll apply a different effect on different turns. So if you, on the first turn, it might do nothing. Second turn, it might do one damage to the person. Third turn, it might do like seven damage or whatever. But
and it's basically a four turn max, because once it ticks through, it's gone.
Exactly. It had a really bunch of cool mechanics in that, and it was really straightforward, very simple. The only thing that had a mana system in it was combo cards, which they use those resources from each of the cards, and if you want to use a combo card, you just discarded those cards and then played the card. So it was very streamlined, very simple. There is no reaction to it. It's not like Magic where you can react to someone doing something on their turn or whatever. It's just straight up, do what you're doing on your turn. Other person does what they need to do and go. And not only that, they're doing a really cool system where you could take your cards and put them online too and play the game online as well. So they're putting a lot of production into this game. And I don't blame
them. I did see some minis for it too, which I don't look like Skylanders. I'm not sure if that was
about that. Yeah.
Marketing, or if they're doing another line where the card game is going to introduce a video game component or what. But the one thing I will say that I liked about this game, because this is, I think, very unique, it's the only game that doesn't have creatures.
Yeah, yeah. There's no monsters. There's no monsters. It's straight. You're attacking the other person. They're attacking you, and that's it.
Or you're playing cards that stay on the board temporarily.
Yeah.
And to Gary's point, there is no "I interrupt you" or anything like that. However, you know, and again, we were playing, you know, soulless demos decks, but
yeah,
there's a lot of different mechanics on those auras or those buffs that you turn, where it might be if an opponent attacks you, you know, absorb three and the opponent takes two, or they discard a card, you know, so the reaction a la Magic is almost built into whatever cards you're kind of stacking in front of you and having. And, you know, I think there's going to be an interesting strategy about timing of playing cards.
Oh, yeah, that was my entire deck. Oh, yeah, I saw that too.
Timing your turns to kind of be like, okay, this card's best on when it's turned to the three. This card's best when it's turned to the two. I'm going to play this card first. Next turn, I'm going to play this card. And at some point, they'll be turned to the, you know, ideal spot for both cards
on
to
the
give
same
me a
turn.
Big combo.
Yeah.
I think that's just a neat system. Phil, I mean, is head over heels into it.
Yeah.
This, for me, was the second best of the three guard games I played, but I really liked it.
Yeah, like, this one, if I was into TCGs, I might have bought cards into it, but I'm just probably going to use Phil's cards. Just, like, make decks with him.
I told him, build six decks. You have enough so we can all play. We can do a mini tournament.
Yeah, exactly, right? And but yeah, that was Lightseekers. Really cool new TCG. Good luck to them. I don't know if they're gonna compete with Magic, but you never know. Last one is actually the last game of the con before we just start walking around for a bit is Gruff. I did not play this one.
This is the third of the three card games, and this was my favorite. This one again, very unique. I have demo copy for the store. You have a character. And you have three of these gruffs in front of you, and that's all you. You don't play any more creatures. So in this game, you have creatures, but you have three that you start with. And there's little plastic markers on the side to track their strength, damage, soaking ability, and their mana generation. We'll call it, or you know, their resources. But what's interesting is every one of them has a different activate ability. So I activate this guy this turn. Well, when I activate him, he has something that says when he activates, he gains one mean. Mean is their attack strength. And they all start at different levels, but, you know. And then his resources, let's say he has, and it's called weird. Let's say his weird is two. When I activate him, my main character that I'm playing, who has one ability, gets the weird into his crazy, which is your spell power. And that never goes down. So when I get to crazy 10, I have crazy 10 forever. So if I have a 5 and a 5 in my hand, I can play it. It doesn't spend it down. Really interesting. I think I beat Phil. It was a close game.
Yeah, you won.
But I think he kind of let me win because we were, you know, we were trying to get
just
through
trying
the
to
demo.
Hurry up
we
and
knew, we
go.
Knew we liked it. It's hard to describe because it really is unique. Come to the store. We'll have demos for it. I think it was great. The guy, I met the designer. I talked to the guy who runs that company. Really nice guy. We have the starter. We have the original game and the expansion. And what's the reason why this is number one for me, I would say its uniqueness is right there with the Lightseekers. Both solid games. The difference is this one's not a TCG.
You just get it's what a, you buy
it's
it
all
and got
encompassed
it.
In the box.
Yeah.
And there's enough. They actually were talking. They run tournaments for this and everything.
Really?
There's enough in there that you have a wide variety of different gruffs to play, different leader chiefs to play in the back. He said they do drafting when they do tournaments for it.
Oh, man.
So I really thought it was great. I'm excited to see what people think.
Yeah, and I believe Tom Bass from the Dice Tower, he reviewed that one, and gave it a pretty good review of it. I don't think he's going to get heavy into it, like if they make expansions, but he enjoyed it definitely. All right, so we were talking about this actually before the recording, but let's go ahead and go over it again. Larry, go ahead and start off. What do you think is going to be your very first game you play that you got today, this weekend or week, whatever?
Well, for anyone who hasn't been to Gen Con, I'm just going to preface this. When people say you can't do the whole con in a day or the whole...
You can't.
So, and I consider myself to be pretty good at running around and seeing everything.
Larry, you're crazy at it, actually.
So, I heard of this game Summit. I didn't know much about it other than I listened to The Secret Cabal, and someone mentioned it, I think, from...
In passing, kind of, or whatever.
Yeah, either Blue Peg, Pink Peg, or Man vs. Me. I don't know.
During the whole Gen Con preview thing.
Yes, and I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. It's a mountain climbing game where you can play it cooperatively or competitively or solo. I'm like, I'll have to check that out. Never saw it. Never saw it. Today, with an hour and a half, 2 hours left as you and I were running around.
Yeah.
Hey, look, there's Summit. It like magically appeared through a portal.
And we walked around that entire place so many times, like, and still missed a
so
bunch of stuff.
So I think that is going to be the first game I play because we talked to the designer. We actually got, it's not available retail, but they actually let us get copies
for
the store. They let us buy them at the store's price so the store can then sell them. So the store's going to have copies of it. It looks great. Talking to the guys about it sounds great.
Yeah.
And it has a solo mode. So when I get home after I sleep for, you know, my life, either I will play it solo or I'll see if my son wants to play with me. But that's the first game I want to get to the table when I get back. Looks. I actually got a T-shirt.
Oh, yeah. You get. Yeah, I got Flask, too. Yeah, Flask, too. Yeah. The only thing that I'm not looking forward to in that game is that... When they were saying that a six-player game can get up to 3 hours, that's the only thing
if
that has me...
If you play competitively, not cooperatively.
Oh, really? Yes. Oh, okay, gotcha. I missed that part. So that's the only thing I'm not looking forward to because I really want to play for the five to six-player range. But if that's the case, it's like, I will, but I'm not going to be rushing for it. But if that's only the case with competitive, then I'll definitely try cooperative.
And he said, I asked him this question because I'm always curious with cooperative games. He said if you played on the easiest mode, on cooperative, you should win it about 70% of the time if you know what you're doing. He said if you played on the hardest mode, he said you're going to win it less than 10% of the time. And he said if you play with the Yeti expansion, he has yet to win it on the hard mode. And he's come close. So, and that's important in a cooperative
definitely
game.
Is.
You want that. You want to push yourself to try to do better and have a challenge and not just say, oh, it's cooperative and we're always going to win.
There's no point in it at that point. You might as well just, like, go outside and have an ice cream and just enjoy yourself at that point. I just had a good time when I get ice cream instead of, like, getting beat up all night. But I think the first game for me that I'm going to play is definitely Magic Maze. I think I'm addicted to that game now. Like, I think that's going to be a game in which I'll almost... I'll go as far as putting it. I think that's a top 10 game easily for me. Like, maybe even top 5. I like that game that much.
Is it the game or is it the constant?
It really is. It's such a funny, passive-aggressive game that's just so good. But, no, I love that game. I loved every single time we put that game on the table. And it was like, I almost didn't want to try other games, but I was like, we gotta try other games because we're at Gen Con, that's what you do. But Magic Maze is definitely going to be the first one. I feel like I could pull out that game with anyone, anywhere. I run bar events too, so that's going to be a hit at bars. But that's definitely going to be the first game I play is definitely Magic Maze, just because I want to get to the tail myself again. But in all that, it's a quick game, quick to teach. It's so goofy. But what's the game that you really want to get to the table? Like not that it's just going to be the first one, but what's going to be the one that you're going to be itching for, I guess. Best way to put it.
Well, there's a few of them I haven't gotten to play. Whistle Stop and Wasteland Express. So I'm itching to play those. I'm itching to play Tesla versus Edison.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick a gem of the convention for me, a surprise... gem, I think it's Photosynthesis. I think that's a game I could see myself playing 10 to 15 times before the end of the year with a variety of different leveled players and gaming groups.
Too.
So, which when I found out about King Domino, I got that to the table 35 times because it's so quick and easy. My kids liked it. Photosynthesis
is not as quick though.
It's not as quick, but it gives me that same, hey, I could play this with my 9-year-old, I could play this with my wife, I could play this with almost any game group I'm involved in. I can get this to the table, teach it in 5 minutes, have a rich experience, and probably be done with the game in no more than 45 minutes.
And the crazy thing about that game though, it's like, it's so ingenious, like, everything just makes sense. Hey, the sun's moving this direction. What's going to get sun points? Oh, what's behind other things is not going to get sun points, because in real life, that's what happens. They get other things' shadows. But
so it's not the game I'm dying to play, the, you know, right when I get home or whatever, but I'm going to make the bet that of all the games I bought, it's probably the game I will play the most from now until the end of the year.
Gotcha. I think my game I'm going to be itching to get to the table most is definitely TI4. 100% TI4. I was not expecting that to go on sale at the con. I went there actually day at the end of day two, because I got a ticket day one, so I knew I had a copy. And one of my friends got it for me day two because he sat in line to wait for his copy. But that's going to be the game I'm itching to get to the table first. Not first, but the most at this point, because I was already trying to plan a TI3 day this month, and it fell through because, to be honest, I just didn't feel like doing anything on that day. But but then now that TI4 all of a sudden got released, it's like, oh, now I have to do this now. We got to do a TI night now, or day or whatever. But my only complaint is it doesn't have the 7 to 8 players. But besides that, seems like they've done a lot of good things with the game. I've only played the game twice, but the trade mechanic looks like it was a great job that they did to change it up. Adding all the species in it. You don't have to punch out all the minis. God, that took me like 2 hours to punch out the first time I opened up that box on TI3.
And there's an insert from Fantasy Flight.
There's actually an insert, yeah. Did come with any bags.
But it was an insert. They're getting better.
Yeah, they're getting better. No bags, but they at least had an insert, and he didn't have to punch out all the minis. Good job, Fantasy Flight. We congratulate you on that one.
Gary, speaking of Fantasy Flight, I think the listeners, especially the ones at the store, would like to hear two things that we got to see that they might not know a lot about.
The new announcements?
We got to see firsthand two minis games, being Star Wars based, one being Game of Thrones based.
Yeah.
Now, the Game of Thrones had a Kickstarter, but it was a light Kickstarter because they want to push retail. They want to kind of a la X-Wing do something every month and make sure. And a lot of people were worried about these minis. Not only were they gorgeous, they showed us stuff that the Kickstarter people didn't see. They actually had war machines, which we didn't know. Never saw.
Really?
Like ballista, catapults, trebuchets. Like, we got to see some cool minis. I hate to say that for CMON. But, and I got to see it demoed. Looks great. To me, if you're a Warhammer Fantasy player or were, and you like a Game of Thrones, this is going to be a great retail purchase. On the flip side,
Games Workshop is in trouble. They're in trouble.
They have a strong following, but these two games, Star Wars, everyone loves Star Wars.
Star Wars Legion, man, that looks good.
And to me, that falls. Whereas Game of Thrones is more that fantasy rank and file style battle game, minis game. Star Wars is that 40K. You know, units have some distance apart. There's some individual models. I saw Darth Vader on the board with a couple of stormtroopers. Yeah. I saw
the skirmish.
What did I see? I saw a was it an AT-ST or something? It was a smaller one, but they look great. I mean, I was like, Now they were all painted, so I got excited. I'm like, oh!
I got pictures. Maybe I'm like,
did they come painted? No, you got to paint. But that's quarter one or two of next year.
Yeah, they're coming out. Fantasy Flight is crazy with like announcing it, and then it's like,
ready. Well, what I find interesting is they're making sure it comes out before CMON's Game of Thrones game. I wonder how the politics is going with that between those two companies.
Wow. Probably because CMON already did the Kickstarter, so it's like they got to rush it out there before it's actually out and everyone already has it so they can buy more stuff at that point.
Looking at both those games, if you're already a miniatures player or if you've thought about getting into it, both of these games...
These are good times, man.
It's a good time, but it's also like the Game of Thrones one's almost a hybrid minis game / board game, so you get some other mechanics in there. You got to be willing. Now, what I will say is the CMON minis for Game of Thrones come pre-assembled. So there is hard plastic for all the weapons, so no bendy. They look great. The Star Wars Legion is assembly, but like their Rune Wars, it's that lot. You should glue it, but it's that, you know, L into an L fits in nice and snug. So easy assembly is the way they described it to me. But
okay,
look for those, I believe, Star Wars quarter one of the new year. And then
Game of Thrones probably gets quarter two.
Or May for Game of Thrones. So look for that at the store.
Yeah, those look like really interesting games. The ones that I saw, like the interesting announcements that I heard of, was Fireball Island from Restoration Games is coming out. They have no definite time, but that's the next Restoration game. So they've already been doing a great job with all of them, and now they're going to come out with Fireball Island, which is by far the most requested game that they got for that. What's also going to be funny, though, is that they said they're going to add more randomness to it. So it's like they're going to take an old-school game, which those old-school games were already really really random, and make it more random. So that's going to be interesting. The other announcement was it was a really cool pinball game. Not pinball, the marble game that we saw.
Roller coaster?
Yeah, the roller coaster game. That one looked interesting.
And you should talk about the circus game.
That Meeple Circus. I was mad that they weren't selling that game. It's going out. That's going on sale at Essen. But it was a Meeple Circus where you can you're basically drafting meeples for a circus, and then after a while you are then we should have talked about this. Oh, you didn't play, so that's why I was on the list. But so you're drafting meeples to put in your circus, and then the crowd wants certain things. So they want to see, like, a meeple upside down, or they want to see a horse meeple balancing a ball on top of a guy on top of the ball, for example. You get points for that. So you're basically trying to do as many of these things as you possibly can in your act within a span of 2 minutes. And it's going to be a hit. That game is going to be such a huge hit. Like, that was probably the best dexterity game I've played at the convention, just because I didn't get to open my copy of Super Battle Rhino Hero. So
I didn't get to play it, Gary, but that's a must buy for me.
What?
Like, it's the Meeple Circus.
Oh,
my
yeah.
kids love it's, junk art, and this to me looks like a
this
more
is gonna
exciting, more fun junk art.
It's going to kill junk art, I think, because junk art's cool and all. Junk art's great. My problems with junk art is that its biggest strength is also its biggest weakness. The biggest strength is it has a bunch of different mini games in it, but its biggest weakness is that you have to go through that rule book and read the rules for the mini game every single time you play it, unless you play the game all the time, which no one does. Well, not saying no one does, but not a lot of people play the game enough where everything is memorized on the rules. So, Meeple Circus, I guess one thing I see different between the two is I think I could bring junk art to a bar. Maybe Meeple Circus, but it takes up more table space, I think. But
Gary, are they giving a sand timer in there for the 2 minutes? I noticed in the demo there was circus music going on, which was cool. Was that an app or was that just something at their booth?
I think they were just winging it. I don't know.
Hey, if you're out there and you're from that company, let's get a free app to play 2 minute. Circus act.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, right. I mean, they said it was an app, but I never saw it. They never showed it. Like, they never like had it up and you could see it going on the app or anything like that. It almost seemed like the person just pressed play on a media thing.
Okay,
but
interesting.
But what's it called? I can't wait for that. That's a instant buy for me. I was also mad it didn't have When I Dream either for sale. That game should have been on for sale.
Well,
for
let me talk about that real quick. We actually played that.
You played it.
I didn't play it.
I've been waiting to play a game for
years. That was nuts. Let me tell you, that was nuts. Now, you get blindfolded, and there's cards, and there's three people or more giving you clues. We were playing a four-player game, so there's three people giving clues. One person's like the good fairy, and they're giving you good clues so that you can guess the card correctly. One person is the boogeyman, so to speak, and they're trying to get you to guess wrong. But they can't be too obvious about it because then you'll know to always ignore that person's clues for that round. And then there's the Sandman who wants you to be very even. So good clues, bad clues, depending on how you're doing. Now, that's hard enough. And boy, did I struggle with the blindfold on getting many right. However, after you do it, you have to, before the round, so the round ends, you then have to remember every word you did.
Oh, yeah. That.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you.
I've heard people house ruled that to get it out of the game.
It was interesting.
Did you like it?
I did. I mean, the only thing I didn't like is the clues came the same way every time. So Phil gave me a clue, Eric gave me a clue, and then the woman demoing the game gave me a clue. So Phil's clue was always the strongest for me because he was the first one I heard. Turns out he was the boogeyman. So what I would say to the designers of that game is have it be rotating. So first word that comes up for me, player 1, 2, 3 gives a clue. Second word, 2, 3, 1. Third word, 3, 1, 2.
Makes sense.
Back to 1.
Just so everyone has an even amount of time.
Right, just to keep
first.
It fresh, because if you get stuck with the first person giving you the clue is the boogeyman, whereas when Phil went to do it, the first person giving him the... Well, actually, the first round we did, we didn't know there was a boogeyman, sandman. We all gave him good clues. So it was a little better. Then she explained, oh, so this is how the game really works. And then it was a little different when you're getting someone trying to give you tough clues. But
gotcha.
That's going to be... I said this, and I may be wrong. We had a discussion about it. There's some discussion. I might not play Mysterium again when this comes out. If the art's great, if it plays like I think it's going to play, when I have an option to play that style game, I think I'd play this over Mysterium.
And all
that's
that,
just me.
I feel like that's also like a more, it's a more appealing game because like Mysterium, you come out, you bring out that big, nice wooden, not wooden, but a little whatever, cover thing or whatever. And that looks cool. But this game, you put a blind on someone, that's just like brings to a different level. But
being blindfolded at a convention is also very unsettling with all the noise and everything going on.
Yeah, I can imagine. But all right, so let's do like one or two more questions before we end this podcast, before this is too long for Brant and Brian over there. Favorite food?
Well, as always, soba noodles from the Island Noodle.
Oh, nothing beat it. Nothing beat it still. You only had that once this time, right?
Twice. I had it once coming back when I was alone. You know, there was that one booth where we all got that
There was an organic place.
That was
really
healthy.
Good.
That was very healthy. It was good, but for the value, for the price, for the ease of eating in that little container.
Touche. That's
true. The teriyaki chicken over the soba noodles and vegetables wins for me still as my favorite con food to eat on the run or eat in between games. Hats off to those guys. They sweat and work their butts off. Those giant woks, the flames, those guys are pouring sweat.
Yeah, they
God bless them. That does not look like an easy job.
And it's good price, like you said, and everything. Good amount of food for a good price.
What was your favorite food?
Okay, I went to an actual restaurant.
Cheater. You cheater.
But that restaurant was, I can't remember the name. It was like Buca de Polo or something like that. It's an Italian restaurant. Huge servings of food. Like, literally, we got a thing of, like, a chicken carbonara. And it was, like, a small. Served 3 people. So wow. It's, like, it was huge servings. But the food was good. But they screwed up on the service a little bit because we had 2 tables. One table somehow got food and dessert before the other table even got their food. So it was a bit ridiculous at that point. But besides that, food was good. Huge portions. If you're going with a large group of people, I'll definitely recommend a place. And what you should do there is not order your own plate, because you're going to have a ton of leftovers. What you want to do is you want to say, hey, does anyone else want this? And then you both share that plate. And then not only do you share the plate, you then share the entire plate with everyone. Everyone gets a little sample of everything. That's the best way to go about doing that. But great restaurant. Food trucks, though. I don't know. I might have to go with that really organic place, because that place shocked me. Like, the price is a bit pricey. Like, I think I ended up paying like $16 to get the plate of food, a cookie, and a drink. I think it was like $15-16 or something like that. But it was really good. It actually surprised me, because I was expecting it to be not filling. I was expecting it to be kind of like ant, because it was like trying to be super organic, super like no vegan. Was it? No, it wasn't vegan, because there's chicken in there.
Gluten-free, a lot of gluten-free stuff.
Yeah, it was gluten-free, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be like okay, but I was eating it, and I was like, oh man, like,
it's good.
I, I wouldn't be upset if I ate there every day. But
it's just for me, it was too bulky. I couldn't eat it and move. I had to go sit down and eat it, you know?
Yeah, that is true, which is why whenever I went to the, there was like a couple of Jamaican restaurant, food truck place, I always ordered the beef patties there just to make it, nice just to make it simple. Yeah, exactly. Even though I kind of want, one of them I saw Jamaican pulled pork, and I was like, but I got the beef patty. Just for the ease of it. But yeah, I'll go to that organic place, whatever the name of you is or whatever, make the battle bowls, or dragon bowls, whatever, balance bowls, good stuff. Coming from someone that loves eating meat and everything, really good food there. Trying to think of another question.
What was your, I got one for you, Gary.
What?
And I've been there for a few years, so for you, two questions. One, what was the biggest surprise or myth buster about Gen Con that maybe you heard before going? And then two, what was your favorite non-board gaming part of Gen Con?
Okay, good question. Yeah, by the way, this is my first Gen Con ever, so that's why it brings up that question in terms of myth. But yeah, biggest myth, people complain about there's no place to play games.
I'm glad you said that.
You could definitely find a place to play games. The only thing is that you have to just go to the places where they have tournaments, but they're not even holding tournaments half the time. So it's like, you just go there, sit down. Worst case scenario, you just move your table. You just move to the next table. Someone says, hey, move, because we're doing the tournament, just move. And that happened once over the entire 4 days we were there, and we went there for hours at a time
and
playing games.
And that's once over 3 years for me.
And that was once over 3 years? Yeah, yeah, there you go. It's crazy.
And that wasn't even a tournament. That was Splendor that they were doing some, you know, game night thing with Splendor.
Yeah.
So.
And we're two feet away from the exhibitor hall, so it was like right there. You don't have to go to the library or the other hotels for a gaming space. But
so that was your myth buster?
Yeah, 100%, without a shadow of a doubt. Also, the second one is waiting in super long lines for food. Just keep walking. There's going to be a food truck that has no one at it. Like,
well, that's how we got the organic place.
That
right?
was exact. That's how we got the organic place. That's how we
Jamaican
got
beef
the
patty.
One. One of the beef patty spots. The other place we had to wait in line, but it was like 4 or 5 people in front of us at the most, and we weren't even trying to go at inopportune times. It was just like, hey, let's go eat at 1. It was like, hey, no line in the spot, let's go. I think it's just that people see the lines and think it's good because of the line, or they just go to the same place all the time. But we tried different things like almost every meal. But what was the second question again?
What was your favorite non-like board gaming thing to do there, whether it was the charity money throw or the dragon slaying or anything? Like, was there anything that caught your eye like, hey, this has nothing to do with board games, but I thought it was cool. Next year when I go, I want to try it out.
One's kind of cheating, and I was just working at the Dice Tower booth. But that is still kind of board gaming related, I guess. But besides that, I would say if I was to maybe do anything, I'm trying to think, like, we did a lot of board game stuff.
Would you ever
try that Secret Cabal? Secret Cabal meetup. That was it. Because we played one game there. Besides that, it was just drinking and hanging out with people. And that meetup is, okay, when people say, or the Secret Cabal guys say that meetup is crazy, it's crazy because I took pictures and, all right, imagine a city block. Now, a city block is like a solid 100 yards plus. The line to get in there was down 3 city blocks, if I'm not mistaken. Like, me and Mike from Board Game Breakfast, he does a board game makeover. It took us, I'm not exaggerating, from the start of the line to the end, I think a solid 4-minute walk. like just walking for 4 minutes straight. Now, like, how far do you think you can walk in 4 minutes? Quarter of a mile?
At least. I actually do some mile walks at lunch sometimes, and one lap I could do in about 4 minutes, which is a quarter mile.
Yeah, about a quarter mile line to get into the bar for the Secret Ball. Funny thing is, when we got to the front of the line, they were just like, hey, you know you don't have to wait in a line, right? Like, what? Because there's a bar outside. There's two bars inside at separate entrances. The only reason there was a line was for the swag bags. But by the time it got to us, we were number like 580 or 600 or something like that. So there was no more swag bags at that point. But we still got a ticket for the raffle. And the raffle was funny because they had no PA system. So they did it outside. So what ended up happening was Jamie would say a number, and then the crowd would just start chanting the number. So it was like...
Now, I missed this one, but I have a question for you. Did they have the homemade wooden game come in a bag that they got all excited about?
Wait, what?
Last year when I was there, I guess every year at the meetup, someone builds a game for Jamie to raffle as part of the raffle.
There was a game, it's a sack.
It's like something in a sack, and people would want people to pick that pile to see what's in the sack. It's like a secret. And it's this guy does a homemade wooden, you know, dexterity type game.
Oh, I don't know.
And they'll always say, "What's in the sack? Open the sack." You know, so I didn't know if they did that this year.
I don't know. If they did it, I might have missed it, but I don't think they did.
That was a big deal last year when we were there. So
there was like a game they were playing there in the middle of town I never saw before. It was like a stacking game with wooden pieces.
Was that after the raffle?
They didn't make like an announcement or anything like that. It was just people just playing it in the bar. It's kind of casual. It wasn't like a big, huge thing, but a lot of people were playing it. The big thing that people were playing there was Strike.
I need to ask. Was it Tupperware and Dice, or was it an arena and Gladiators? Who won?
Glad you asked that question. There was two tables. There was a Gladiator arena, and then Marty brought his Tupperware version that had his face on all the dice. So it was great.
Oh, I wish I saw that.
Oh, man, it was funny because I showed up to the Gladiator table my first game, and I won. I was just like, yeah, it just shows you. Team Tupperware, man. I just walked away, and I went to the Tupperware table to play there for the rest of the night. So I was like, screw these guys. Going over there, show them who's boss and left. But that was fun. We also played Crossfire there. That was really fun. I'll definitely buy that game when it comes out. Crossfire is like social deduction broken down to the most simplest components. I would compare it to One Night Ultimate Werewolf in terms of the style of game and how it works. But it's even simpler than One Night. And while One Night I wouldn't recommend for newbies, that game I would actually, because it was One Night, it's very simple, but it's a very meta-driven game. Not Crossfire, not as much. But I'll definitely buy that game, especially considering it's only going to be like $15 too. But yeah, Secret Ball, definitely the best non-board game thing to do by far.
Gary, is this going to be posted at all, the video portion?
Yeah, so...
I just want to make sure no police officer watching, wondering how we're driving, doing that. It's worked quite well, actually.
Yeah, right? So the video portion is going to be posted on my YouTube channel, Late to the Table. Actually, we're going to be wrapping up at this point, the whole outro.
Gary, I want to say something, though. I am impressed with your ability with technology. I mean... You got some black tape. This camera has not moved the whole car ride. I'm quite impressed. You know, and all the gear you have is just amazing. You had me take a picture at Gen Con, and you handed me a camera. And I said, what is this? It's a camera. I thought phones had cameras. I didn't know there was cameras anymore because, you know, I haven't seen one since I was a kid because I've been using a cell phone for years to take pictures.
Gotta go pro, man. Gotta get the camera for GoPro, man.
You do a great job at all that stuff, so that's really cool.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for that. Glad to hear people appreciating me, like, going out of the way, doing all this stuff, whatever. I try my best, I guess, best way to put it. But yeah, let's do the outro of this video or podcast, whatever. Sorry, Brian Britt, for getting this podcast for a half second there. But anyways, be sure, guys, to check out the podcast Game Store located in Manchester, Connecticut. And also be sure to join the meetup group for Game On, Chits and Giggles, which we run a bunch of events for the store there. Events that are coming up, none of the horizon except for the Silk Board Gaming meetup that they have on Saturdays at the library. I don't know the exact date. I am sorry, Brian and Brant. But they also play games on Thursday. That's the big meetup night. And on Sundays as well. If you guys have any questions, be sure to hit up the guys on Portal Gaming 60 on the Twitter. Also, be sure to hit him up and reach out to the brand. He's usually the one dealing with the Twitter account. Also, be sure to check them on Dice Tower Network. They are a proud member. And be sure to check out all the other great channels on the Dice Tower Network. And also, before I wrap up, like I said before, be sure to check me out on Late to the Table on YouTube. I do a bunch of tips, tricks, and occasional review up there on the YouTube website. And yeah, that's it. I'm getting tongue-tied at this point. I've been talking way too much this past week. Voice dying out on me. And yeah, catch you guys next time. Be sure you have a great week. And hope you enjoyed this episode. And catch you guys around, man. Have
thanks
a good one.
Thanks for listening.
And yeah, thanks for listening. Take care. Peace.